Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Edinburgh Fringe. Bill Murray in Angel. Please welcome a man who feels like it's the Edinburgh Fringe, even though he isn't. And there's some people arriving who are going to get in his way. It's most exciting. Richard Herring! It's all right, the audience just doubled as I came on stage. Fantastic. It's a very Edinburgh Fringe vibe here. Welcome to Richard Herring's Low Solvent Technology Podcast. Yeah, it's we're looking into why some solvents. It's a new direction. I don't know if you saw it on. We're just looking into why some glues fail quicker than others. It's a new podcast talking to various comedians about what their views on that are. But I was talking to some people doing a magic eye the other day. I said I could see the dolphins. I couldn't. They call it Rahalastabus. So I don't know if that's going to catch on. It is very much like the Edinburgh Fringe in that I'm recording 4 podcasts in 2 days. Nothing's really happened to me in the 12 hours since I was last in this venue doing a podcast. So I will just tell you, thank you for coming, everyone who's come along. As a thank you, and because my garage is very full of junk, you have got some free Rahalastabus. Thank you, gifts. If you feel like doing so, feel no obligation. There's a bucket on a chair on your way out. If you feel like making a donation to Scope, that would be lovely, but don't feel you have to. I'd also remind you that Rahalastabus is going on. Thank you. It's going on tour this autumn and next spring. So go to richherring.com/Rahalastabus. And it's good there's only one person doing it. That's what I like. But it's good. It's like everyone said, you can do that, mate. When that comes up, you do it. We've got it covered. We don't have to exhaust ourselves. We've got some fantastic guests coming up, so do come along and see it. But look, we're going to crack straight on. We have an amazing guest who's never been on before, amazingly, but she is fantastic. She's probably best known. Or do I have to say she's young, so do I have to say they're best known? Alpha, you're a she, or I didn't ask you your pronouns. Phew, thank God I got it right. I could have been cancelled. She is probably best known for appearing in The Dog Ate My Homework. That's why we're all here. Will you please welcome the incredible Elf Lyons, ladies and gentlemen? Elf Lyons. How are you?
I'm really good.
Good.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm extremely good. Do you get stopped in the street a lot about the dog ate my homework?
No, but I really wish I was, because it was genuinely the most pleasurable TV experience I've had, because I've always wanted to be gunged. And it was like a proper old school, like I got dressed up as a giant bee and attached to a zip wire, and then I got dropped. Actually, it was quite harrowing in hindsight. So I had to stand on this box, and they ask you questions, and if you get three wrong, you get dropped down a hole.
Oh, my God.
And you land on like a little trampoline, but it's actually quite big. And on the episode, it's only like 2 minutes. But I was up there for kidding up for about 45 minutes, because the kids just refused to get the... like, we had the general manager just in the whisper... In the whisper piece?
The whisper piece, I think it's called, yeah.
Just saying, get the answers wrong. And you don't want to get the answers wrong because you're an adult. And these kids were getting really annoyed with me that I was purposely getting these answers wrong. And then, right, and then I was up there for ages and eventually I got dropped and it was... quite harrowing.
We could have gunged. If I'd known you wanted to be gunged, we could have arranged a gunging here.
Yeah, for an audio format, that'd be perfect.
Imagine you just got gunged at the start and then no one mentions it and you just have to sit in gunge for the rest of the
podcast.
We could
just make the sound effects. I mean, oh. I don't know what gunge sounds. That's actually quite... That sounds very OnlyFans, actually. But
it was quite nice. Quite liked it. Good, look, well, let's talk about the Edinburgh Fringe. You've done the Edinburgh Fringe many times.
So many times.
But what I love about you, and we were discussing backstage, the first time I saw your act was in 2010, when you were very young. I mean, you're still young.
So I'm still young.
But yeah, I saw you doing a set at some club, which I can't remember whereabouts. Mainly about the London Underground. Was it London Underground rolling stock you were interested in?
I was interested in like the S stock and the Harry Beck. And so I took that to Edinburgh, 1 hour show about the London Underground. And I think it was received.
Did the locals like that? The audacity of someone coming from England?
Yeah, I think it was just the absolute passion of watching a 19-year-old girl just tell you and show you diagrams of her favourite Jube lines. And like the fact that the Jubilee line runs on average 44 miles per hour.
Yeah.
It didn't get a laugh then, but
it just got a wave of interest from this quite nerdy audience. Yeah, please tell us. We could talk about that the whole show if you like. But you've always been very inventive and experimental, I think, within stand-up and within theatre.
Life
is quite an adventure. And you famously trained at the clown school in Paris. That everyone
I didn't do clown though.
Why?
This is I was busy. Everyone bangs on about Philippe Goliot being like a clown school. The poor man hates that it's known as a clown school. He's not a clown school. He's a theatre school. Like he does like Shakespeare, Chekhov, Mask. Boot. He does all this stuff and you spend the whole year there, like with 30 other people from around the world, like learning about the traditions of theatre. And in the final 2 weeks of the year, like 60 Australian comedians rock up to learn. Clown is a boy, I hate this bit of the year. Everybody talking about being a clown. And then I didn't go. I came back to the UK and did the Ducky Homosexualist Summer School at the Royal Vauxhall Tavern, which was for queer artists to make like live art. So I missed, which was then I think really annoyed some people in my year, because I didn't study clown at Goliath and then I did shows and they're like, clown, elf lions. Like, she is not a clown.
So he resents the clowns, but also resents anyone within clowns who hasn't trained to be a clown with him.
Yeah, and then I always find it really funny because he's like, he hates audience participation. Right. He hates you looking people in the eye. He hates people getting up on stage. He hates throwing people with water. He hates people getting their dicks out. And that's, you know, what so many people who went to Goliath do. He's like, this is not clown. He doesn't sound like that, by the way.
It's like he set something up just to annoy himself. He could always just go, I'm going to not do clowning anymore.
Yeah, but I think he likes being paid in cash.
Okay. So you do clowning, you've worked in sort of horror. What's this year's show before we get on to the horror, which is...
So over lockdown, I started learning sign language, British Sign Language. And then I met Duffy, who is a really amazing visual vernacular performer. And VV's like mime in high definition. And it's a type of theatre that was created by the deaf community, the deaf acting world. And he's the specialist. Like he's one of the best performance artist makers in that world. And we just became friends. And he's he's Scottish and he's never been able to go to the Fringe before. He's never, like, it's just been really hard to find a venue, etc. So we were chatting and then we decided to make a show about a heist where, and we just do the entire thing in mime, MVV, and then I sign it and we sign together and then I make all the sound effects and audio describe it. And and he's a testicle thief. Wow. No, I'm a testicle thief. I've got a magic vagina made out of snakes. And he's got really explosive balls. Okay. Which
I think
I
this
still...
is going to be triggering for me, this show.
So
I don't think I can go and see this. I'm already very upset about
you're going to gunge me now.
I wish I had gunged you.
it's just completely batshit crazy. And it's really fun. And we're just doing it for 2 weeks.
Yes.
First 2 weeks, monkey barrel. Have a great time. No press, nothing. No top lists, nothing. Yeah. We're just going to do it every day. Have a good time. Go home.
No, it sounds fantastic. And also that's, you know, it is, because Edinburgh is so difficult for disabled people to be involved in, because most of the venues are absolutely inaccessible.
Yeah, most of the venues. Oh, yeah, sorry.
It's not something people think about so much, even the sign language.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, even Chortle put up their top 10 disability-themed shows, and you're like, it's not disability-themed. Like, you don't go, you know what I'm going to pick this year? Not being able to walk. No, it's not. People don't do that. So it's disability-led, but, most venues aren't accessible. To get a caption, sign language interpreter is really difficult.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of also... So we play on the fact there are so many assumptions people make within about here, deaf culture, and, like, the interpreter thing that a lot of interpreters find really frustrating, especially when they're signing at comedy gigs, is hearing comedians taking advantage of the interpreter by being like, oh, okay, what's cunnilingus? What's the... And just getting the...
I've done that a few times, I have to say, sorry.
But it's this thing that everyone's like, it's funny, but, like, for the deaf audience going, right, okay, we're just sort of having our culture, like, thrown back at us for the sake of laughter on hearing people. So we play with those and, you know, the whole Rose in Strictly Come Dancing. And it's just fun because I'm not fluent in sign language yet. So most of the time, one time I was trying to sign something and I accidentally signed I was going to commit suicide.
Okay.
But that's very different. It's very similar to signing I'm going to defeat you. Okay. So it really changes the vibe of the scene. And saying you're tired is very similar to saying you're depressed.
Yes.
Torch is very similar to dickhead. Okay. So, you know, you've got loads of misunderstandings.
That's fun. My son, who's 5, is they teach it to them at school a little bit. So he comes and does that.
Yeah.
Which I believe is thank you, but thank you. Probably just told you to fuck yourself.
Fuck yourself is this.
Okay. I can do that one as well. I use that one as well. So that's good. But you're also... So that's great. That sounds fantastic. People must go and see that. That sounds brilliant. But you are also... work with other comedians. You're a mentor, really, with comedians. You do lots of courses and mentor other comedians. So a lot of your shows are up in Edinburgh that you're involved with, right?
Yeah, so I've ended up helping and, like, doing... I think it's just, this is just the lovely thing, isn't it? Especially, like, just doing lots of live work and making shows that you want to make, and also just refusing to sort of go down the line that might make... I think my agents in the past have gotten frustrated because they do want to make money.
Yeah.
And then I make shows that make them totally financially unviable. And so making shows that I really like and then attracting audiences that go, oh, I want to make a show where I can just be myself. So it's been really cool. Lots of different artists coming forward, and then I'll come with them and mentor them on slapstick, or if they need to use mime or dramaturgy and stuff. So I've directed a lot of shows for Edinburgh this year, and then a lot of artists I've worked with privately on stuff.
Okay.
'Cause some people are, like, really up for saying, oh yeah, so and so help me with their show.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are like, I don't want anybody to know anybody help me with anything.
It's a weird thing. I mean, like, I think, like, it's quite old school now to want to be completely in control. You know, I would never even think of bringing... I mean, I think I did for some of the plays I did, I had a director, but I would never think of having a director for my stand-up or for someone helping with my stand-up. But a lot of people do. A lot of people have writers and, you know...
Yeah, it's become a very common thing I've noticed, and also quite fashionable to say so-and-so, a larger name, has directed your show. That's not why people ask me to direct the shows. But I don't think it really is directing, because the truth is, it's like... If you direct an actor and you're like, I need you to go downstage left now, you do have to do what the director says. You can't go, well, actually, for me intrinsically as the character, I want to be centre stage.
Yeah.
You do what the director tells you. But me as a director of comedy with the, if it's their first hour, they've got to learn, you know, it's their choices, it's their show, it's their narrative. So yeah. I can say as much as how many sessions we they want to spend with me, and I can say, well, I personally don't think we should end on a dick gag there. I think we should do this. But if that's what they really want to do in their heart, then, yeah. So it could, it's really funny. You can spend loads of time with an artist and then them not really taking on anything because it's their show. But they just really, a lot of times, some people just want the space to play and showcase and experiment and do all the groundwork before taking what they want in front of a in front of an audience.
Yeah. I guess, you know, I would just use, the way I do it is just do lots of previews, and so I use the audience as that sounding board, I suppose. Yeah. But I guess if you're worried you won't get an audience, or if it's an early show, I can understand why you would.
Yeah, I think it's also when people just want to do something new.
Yeah.
Because I think there's that expectation, like, especially when you're doing something weird, you've got to accept that you are going to get audiences that don't like it or haven't seen something like that before, and you are making your life a bit harder. Like, I went to Oslo 2 weeks ago at Latter, which is like their biggest comedy venue. And it was really interesting because it was so evident the audience were not used to alternative. And I wasn't even being as alternative as I can be, or whatever that means. But, you know, and I was like, I'm making my life harder for me because the audience are going to laugh less because there's this moment of them going, I've not seen a woman do Swan Lake as a mime in a different language, or whatever I was miming, killing myself as a spider, whatever it was. Can I just say it is funny? Like, I know it doesn't sound funny, but you are making your life a little bit more difficult when you do want to do the more alternative stuff.
Yeah.
So I think it's working with someone who's done it and then backing you.
Yeah.
And then me also being critical, because now it's at that point they send me the videos and I'm like, no, that bit doesn't work. And it hasn't worked, and now you need to change it.
Yeah.
And then I become really mean.
Good. Well, I think it's really, you know, I really admire you for that. And I think, because you started so young as well, and, you know, at a time when there weren't loads of women in doing comedy. And I think it would have been easy for you to go down the route of going, I'm going to become a TV presenter, I'm going to do this. You know, you're a very good-looking woman, and, you know, you're good, and you're immediately very funny. So it would have been easy for you, to kind of go down a more traditional route.
Oh, that's nice. I don't really I never ever felt I was ever commercially viable from the get-go. Like, even after I got nominated, yeah. I remember someone being told, well, they don't want a female clown. And I was like, okay, then. And they were like, well, you've got to focus on your show for next year. And I was like, okay. Like, I've never... But it doesn't... In truth, it doesn't really matter to me. Like, I want to make really good shows. And, you know, we were mentioning, like, the 1,000 true fans. People who come and see me, I recognise because they've seen me before and they've seen me again, and I really love that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you only get... A plastic bag is going to outlive us and our children and our children's children, so why do I care if I got 3 stars and not a 4 from Chortle?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Like, I don't really... I'm not going to change, and I'm not going to queue for a club that doesn't want me as a member.
No.
Like, I don't have any interest to change myself for the sake of being on a TV show when the format and the world is changing so much.
Yes.
Which my family are like, yes, but if you just did straight stand-up, you could maybe, you could buy a house. And I'm like, you have no idea how money in comedy works, yeah, Dad. I could flat.
Or the housing market, either. I'd say an economist is a problem for him. Yeah. Well, it's good, you know, but I think most comedians would envy you because it is, you know, you've stayed true to what you want to do and you're still doing it. And it's, you know, that's a 15-year career already, which is phenomenal.
I'm really happy. Yeah, yeah. Like, I'm really chuffed.
Yeah, good. I'm glad you are.
I'm very content.
But you do, you know, you've experimented. I've read you, and you've obviously done a lot of stuff with horror, as we were mentioning. But it is interesting the similarities between horror and comedy, that they sort of are two sides of the same coin, really.
Oh yeah, because they both control the heartbeat. They both, a good comedian and a good horror maker, they control how the audience breathe. Because the whole time, the audience mimic actually how you are. Like, you can tell an audience who's never seen a comedian before can tell if a comedian is nervous. Because if they come on and they just hold their breath, the audience go... and everyone sits there and goes, oh, this is tense. And we build up a tense environment. And that comedian, no matter how funny their lines are, if they're not breathing properly, the audience are going to have a shit time, and so is the act. And it's the same with horror. And it's all about that ability to control just when the audience can take their breath, just when they hold it back, and when to release it, whether it be, you know, the pullback and reveal, or the expectation he's going to come from that angle, but he was actually behind you the whole time.
Yeah.
And I really like that with horror and comedy. And it was really fun, actually, with Raven playing with that on stage. because it was a horror comedy show and it did really frighten people as well as make them laugh. And I thought that was really exciting because with live horror, what's so cool is you know from the get-go it's not real because there's only one person on stage. You can see all the working mechanics,
yeah.
Which is why something like, you know, Woman in Black was incredible and it was such a travesty that it got taken off the stage and ended in March because it was one of the most... To be able to do that with just theatre and light and sound design and zero props is phenomenal. And that's why, you know, anyway, but with horror, like with Raven, you know, just being like telling funny stories and doing a dance where I pretend to be a nonce and then suddenly going from that again, it is funny.
It is
funny. And then doing a mime where I'm a little fly being eaten by a spider and people got really upset. Nice. And then turning into a monster at the end of the show, which is what I do. And then I bite loads of men's dicks off.
Yeah.
Like it is...
Literally?
No, with vegetables. Oh, okay, but, you... oh, it's so, it upsets so
I mean,
people.
I don't think you're going to... You won't sell some tickets if the end of the... I mean, you'll sell some tickets.
Don't kick,
but,
it was with lots of fruit and vegetables.
Okay.
The budget for watermelons was fucking insane. I think I got through £250 worth of watermelons by the end of Edinburgh. But they were organic, okay?
And tax deductible.
And tax deductible.
Well, yeah, good.
And the shop was really happy for our custom.
But, you know, but horror, essentially, a laugh comes from... A lot of the times from the relief that the horror hasn't happened. So
yeah.
It's just the next reaction if something's a false bit of horror or, you know, a surprise. So it's a really interesting point to make. And you said something about, you know, bad horror is laughable and bad comedy is terrifying.
Yeah.
So it's, and the other way around.
They really walk the trapeze line.
Yeah.
And that's a really fun thing. So even if the comedy doesn't work, you still achieved your expectation of being terrifying.
Yeah.
And bad horror is really funny. So either way, you sort of win.
Yeah.
And I quite like that conflict. And how do you do the both really, really well? Which is what Inside Number 9, I think, did exceptionally well at the beginning. Even though they veered now more straight into straight horror, because once it's good, you don't really matter what genre it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what I like.
Yeah.
So that's what I want to continue making. I like making people scared.
Does it say something about you? Yeah, because you seem, in real life, you seem very bright and friendly and not a horror person. But does it say something about what's going on inside your...
Probably.
Psyche?
I mean, when you're little, the world is really frightening. And if you've got a very over-imaginative imagination.
Yeah.
I always thought I could see ghosts. I'm certain there's a ghost in my partner's house at the moment.
Okay.
I'm certain of it. But then, you know, you play with it and you put it on stage. And also, because I used to be a teacher, I found horror was a really fun format to teach the kids, the teenagers. And we do all the horror special effects because it's a form of control as well for them.
Yeah.
Things that frighten them. I'm like, okay, well, what are you frightened by? Let's work out how they make it on stage. Let's deconstruct it. Pull it apart. And I think that's a fun thing about horror. And so anything that you're actually afraid about in real life, that going, okay, I'm really frightened of flying, so what do I need to know? I need to know everything I need to know about flying to pull apart how planes work. And I think horror encourages you to do that because you watch all the horror effects in Saw or the Human Centipede and you're like, how did they do that special effect? Oh, okay, it's lubricant and latex. Oh, okay, that's cool.
And talking of the Human Centipede, it would be remiss of me not to ask you. If you were to be put in a Human Centipede, but you could choose, you're in the middle, but you can choose who's ahead of you and who's behind you. Do you have any ideas about? I feel like you've thought this through, even though you're pretending to think about it now.
No, I haven't. But I'm trying to think about what people eat because I think that's integral. Like,
it is a big part of it.
You know, what do people regularly eat? Okay, and I'm in the middle.
Yeah, you're in the middle, so you're eating and being eaten.
I mean, what a lovely day out. Yeah. Am I being gunned? Well, probably actually. Yeah, yeah. Very different type of show. Oh, God, I'm really bad at this off the top of my head. My immediate thought was Julian Barrett at
the
front.
Okay, why not?
My argument, my reasoning was like, he's just such a phenomenal actor.
He is. I feel like if you're going to go for the Mighty Boosh, Noel Fielding, I feel would like poop bird pellet kind of things.
Yeah, maybe.
I think Julian Barrett does great big shits. That's my feeling. I think they're
maybe I should go for someone really like dainty. Maybe like a dainty ballerina type at the front. I know he's dead, but I think maybe that'd be easier. But the point is, if he was at the front, I think maybe he had a toned diet.
Yeah.
So maybe he would be quite compact and to the point.
And he might just mime his shits as well.
Maybe mime his shits. I suppose the person behind you has got to be someone you probably don't like.
Yes, that's the general idea.
That's the general... Oh, is it?
Yeah. Well, you know.
Just want to explain it to you. Who do I not like? Oh, many pets insurance company.
Oh, really?
I'm going to put them in mind. They have been a real faff recently. Okay. I don't want to name names.
Yeah,
but no, they know... Actually, they have paid it, finally. But I don't like now that you have to, in order for anyone to do anything, you've got to complain online.
Yeah.
I really hate that because it means my nanny Squeak, who's 93, is never going to get anything sorted because they're not going to pay attention to her. But me, because I retweet and I'm bang on about it enough on the internet,
yeah.
I get really bad customer service. I just don't understand why it's so bad. My partner had to calm me down. He's like, you just got to let this go. And I'm like, I can't let it go. It shouldn't take half an hour for a coffee. I see, I've lost some people. I think it's because I used to do so many odd, weird jobs.
Yeah.
And I remember I used to sell the ice creams at the Old Vic, and I took such, I mean, the money was terrible, but I took such pride in doing that job. And, like, you know, it can make someone's evening. Like, a small thing can really, if the person at the box office isn't friendly,
yeah.
It doesn't matter how good the show is, all that person's going to think about is that person wasn't very friendly.
Yeah.
And people are so cruel nowadays. I know this isn't funny,
it's
but
okay.
People are just so mean all the time. You're like, I'm sure she didn't intentionally mean to hit you with a bag. I think this is why I went into horror, actually, because a lot of people I murder are just in customer service.
Yeah.
Like, I hold a lot of grudges, and I think I can't carry that with me, so I just put it into horror.
Yeah, well, I think just a horror film about killing people in customer service would be very successful.
But do you know what? That's what I'm working on.
Good, okay, good. Well, I think you're going to be a big star.
I can't get over people being mean. I think this probably wasn't why I was a good teacher, but I just couldn't understand why children were horrible to each other. And it's so funny as a teacher because kids have to write these witness statements now. So, and it would be like, the child would be like, so they'll say, oh, this happened in the playground. So you get A in, and A's like, so I was in the playground paying no mind. B came up to me and said I couldn't read. I said I can read. And B kept on telling me that I couldn't read. So I decided to hit him around the face and show him who's boss. I was doing it just to defend myself. And then B's statement was, I was in the playground and A started going on about how I had a Nintendo Switch. I don't have a Nintendo Switch. I then told him that he smelled and his ears look fat. He then hit me. I then hit him back and I bit him. I was defending myself. And you read them and you're like, ah, okay, whose side do I take?
Yeah. No, well, I've got two children, so I'm very aware of these battles and that you can't win whatever happens.
You have to keep such a straight face.
Yeah, I'm very bad. I mean, my wife's much better. My wife generally gets angrier than I just find them funny all the way, however much they're hitting each other. Kids, but you have so to be, yeah, you mustn't. You must be, you must let them know that what they're doing is not funny. I'm not good at it. I'm not good at it.
It is funny, though.
And I think since I've had kids, for some reason, I was never good with blood and stuff, but I think I've never really been into horror. But the older I've got, I just find it just, I'm up too upset. Even I just look, see the description of something, like there's a TV show about some murder, the Sixth Commandment's on at the moment.
Oh,
and it's
God.
Meant to be amazing. But I just look at the story and go, I don't want to watch that.
No, it's too depressing. Yeah. Timothy Spall is too precious. I think it's also when it's true.
Yeah,
it's think the thing about horror, like, to an extent, like, there is that sense of escapism. But nowadays, there's this weird under... I hate, like, true crime podcast. Like,
yeah.
Like, I don't like with recent stuff. Like, I think the obsession with it, there's something really bizarre, because also it tends to always be women and the scenario, like, yeah. Jeffrey Dahmer. Like, I don't understand why you would put that on when there's so much amazing writing and when the world is so difficult. There's so many amazing surrealist ideas that you can put on screen. Why do you use beautiful cinematography to showcase the horrific death of someone whose name nobody will remember, yeah. But then everyone fantasizes and fetishizes the hot guy playing the villain. Like, I find that really perturbing. I don't like it.
Yeah, but it's human beings. That's why, because people want to watch. If you know, all these things are supply and demand, and they realize. I used to be fascinated by serial killers, but now I can't stand any of that stuff. So I used to read books about Fred West and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, but I.
I think it's a youth thing, maybe. Yeah, like, I remember once being really... So, I didn't have any friends when I was little, and still don't, but I really... No, no, I'm fine, actually. I'm really well-received. But I used to spend all my time in Choices, the film shop. Do you remember, like... It was, like, niche blockbusters.
Right, okay.
And I used to spend... And there was Kyle, actually, and I don't know... Bet you he does listen to your podcast. Such a lovely man. He was a Satanist. If you worked at Choices in Sevenoaks in the years like 2002 to 2009, thank you. He would never charge us for late payment fees on films. And I used to spend my whole weekends there, and I would just watch the films on the screens. They'd let me set me behind the desk, and I'd just watch all these films. And I remember coming home, and there was this amazing film on the Rwandan genocide, which I thought was phenomenal. And I remember putting it down on a Saturday night with my mum, and my mum was like, no. She's like, we are not watching this film. She was like, you can in your spare time, but I am not sitting down to watch this after a long day of work.
Yeah.
And I didn't really understand. I was like, well, you don't understand the powerful of cinema and John Hurt's in it. But then I think as a grown-up, you go, no, I can't be fucked anymore.
Yeah, I think so.
I just want Pixar.
It's true. That's the nice thing about having kids. You can watch all of that stuff, and it's not weird. Encanto's very good. I love Encanto. Yeah, I love Encanto. I listen to that's my favourite music as well now. We listen to the soundtrack all the time. It's good because I've obviously got a childish brain. Most adults get annoyed that they have to listen to their kids' music in the car. I kind of like Encanto. Para de family, Madrigal. Okay. Just me. It's good. It's written by the guy who did Hamilton, isn't it, partly?
It was so sweet how you started singing,
yeah.
And then you, like, lost confidence.
No one liked it.
And I really wanted you to keep going.
Carry on. No, we're part of family, America, where all the people are fantastical and magical. It's the girl from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, is the little girl in it, and she's absolutely brilliant, I think. I want to tell her how great she is, but, don't. It would be a bit weird to go on Instagram. I know, I'd follow her on Instagram. Go, I think you're very good as the little girl in Encanto.
Maybe not. Sometimes you just got to pull back.
Just got to go with it. But if she listens to the podcast, Stephanie Beatrice, I believe her name is. She's a very talented comedian.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Let's have a... Well, look, let's talk... We're talking about podcasts and which ones you don't like, but you do a podcast with your dad.
He's the cool... I think he's genuinely one of the coolest people in the whole wide world. Okay. And I love him because he's very tall and he loves economics and Echo and the Bunnymen and Fulham.
Okay.
And those are the three things he loves. And the cat. That's literally it. And I was, when I wanted to be a comedian, obviously, I was doing that thing of like, I've got to do something else. And my dad would sit me down. He's like, David Beckham did not become the best football player, but deciding to focus on swimming. He did it. He was good at football and he practiced and he did it day in and day out. And he practiced with his right foot and his left foot and he kept focusing. And even though it's going to take a long time, if you want to be a comedian, you've got to focus. And he doesn't talk like that. He talks more like, you've got to focus. And I always loved economics, so I focused on economics. And he's just a very calm, and he just adores economics. Like he genuinely, like, he adores it more than anything. And inspired, like, in 2018, I made a show called Chiff Chaff, which was me doing a musical about all economic theories in an hour. Right. And I did it as a Liza Minnelli show. And I recorded my dad talking about economics and I lip-synced him and then cut it in because he loves punk music. So he used to teach me about all economic theories by playing me different punk music. So he used to use Dead Kennedys to explain like global inequality and stuff like flying lizards and like capitalism. So it was really interesting. But that was inspired because he said, everybody thinks economics is boring and it's not boring. Economics is beautiful. And so I sort of thought I'd like to combine that with the podcast. And we don't get to see each other a huge amount because we're always so busy. So
yeah.
I think nowadays like this, like you don't really get to see your friends unless you collaborate with them. Yeah. I was like, Dad, should we do a podcast? He's like, oh, okay. What's that? So we do a podcast and I ask him economic questions and then we just sort of pull it apart.
Yeah.
And it's really good fun.
I mean, economics is a very confusing subject, as presumably economists do, because it's not going very well.
Well, it depends. It's going very badly in some places, but it's going very well in others. But like, it depends what different types of economics you're talking about.
Okay.
Like the economics of animals, the economics of theatre, the creative economy. Like we always think economics is one big hobob, but it's lots of different components. And there's some really interesting economists coming through. But my dad, I think what I didn't like at school was that it was always so centred on maths, when actually it's about history and it's about human history and looking at how people behave and looking where they invest their money and why they pay money. And, you know, these questions, is it better to die with debt than to die with profit? Like, what is it? And so, yeah, me and my dad just chat about that, basically.
So what's it called, the podcast?
Elfonomics.
Good.
It was originally What the Hell is Economics, because we thought that was really fun, but it's really hard for people to type more than one word, apparently. So Elfonomics was just the quicker and easier one.
Okay.
So we do that together.
That's good. And let's talk about you being called Elf, because I think I just always assumed you'd been christened Elf, maybe by someone who, you know, liked Lord of the Rings or something.
Not at all, no.
How did you come by the name Elf?
It was a yoga instructor.
Okay.
And I was working at the Forest Fringe and I was the door girl and I had to make porridge for people in the queue for Daniel Kitson. And I'd never met Daniel Kitson and I was really annoyed who this Daniel Kitson was. I was like, who organises a comedy show at 8 o'clock in the morning? So all the volunteers have to make porridge for all the people in the queue. Why is everybody queuing to see this man called Daniel Kitson? And everyone's like, we get to go and see him. And I'm like, I'm not going to go and see Daniel Kitson at 8 o'clock in the morning. I've been clubbing till 6 a.m. I'm an 18-year-old. No. So I made porridge for everyone in the queue and I'd do the door. And I was, you know, none of us were getting paid. And it was at the Forest Cafe, which is now the Assembly in Edinburgh. It was such a cool vibe. Like you'd be there at like 7 a.m. opening and cleaning everything up. And then you just party until 6 a.m. and then you go and sleep somewhere for half an hour and then you do the whole thing again. It was like amazing. Like the best month of my life at the Forest Fringe. And that was my first Edinburgh experience. And I was like, wow, the world is an amazing place. But there was a yoga instructor. And what I really enjoyed was that I used to get chatted up a lot because I was 18 and I was on the door. And, you know, I had really short hair. And I'd never had been chatted up before because I'd always been the ugly one in my friendship group because I had red hair. And then suddenly I went into the real world and people did fancy me. And I was like, this is the best day of my life. I do believe in God. And because I was really religious back that time, I was questioning. And then honestly, the amount of times that I had a good old pound. Anyway, we can cut that bit. But the point is, and a really lovely time. I was like, maybe God is real. But the point is, Xander came in. And actually, I did see him in a kink club recently and he did really well with Bitcoin. But the point is, Xander was in the queue and he looked at me and he had like this Scottish-American accent. He was like, what's your name? I can't do accents. And I was like, oh, my name's Emily Ann, but everyone calls me Eel, which was my school nickname, Emily Ann Lyons. And he's like, Eel, that doesn't suit you. You're more like an elf. And I was like, oh, that's nice. And then he was like, my name's Andrew. And I was like, oh, like Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And he's like, wow, I've never met a girl like you before. And I was like, I just slid off my chair. And then Daniel Kitson was playing and he was like, come up with me. And there was an organ upstairs on the upstairs level of this space where Daniel Kitson was performing. Anyway, so Xander took me up there and we had a lovely time while Daniel Kitson was doing the show. And then Xander was like, made me wear these headphones. In hindsight, it was just really annoying, but he was like, because I was actually starting to like what he was, Daniel, I was like, oh, it's interesting his use of wordplay and the way he spins out an anecdote. I want to pay attention. And Xander was like, no, I want you to listen. Have you ever heard of Joanna Newsom? And I was like, no, who's that? He's like, well, I've never met a girl like you before. I get it. Educate you. And he's like, have you heard of Bikram yoga? And I was like, no. And he's like, I'm a yoga instructor. And I was like, wow, this man is so amazing. And he made me listen to Emily by Joanna Newsom, which is like an 8-minute long song, and then listen to that. And then after that, I was known as Elf. And every time I tried to introduce myself and Xander was there, he's like, no, she's Elf now, right. And so I sort of kept it. I thought that sounded kind of cool.
So a predatory man named you Elf. And you've decided to keep that as your name, as sort of a tribute to the way...
Well, now you've retold it like that. He's very happily married now.
Is it good?
He had a small stint as a doctor, and all I know is he doesn't do that anymore.
Oh, dear. What a wonderful world we live in.
I'm really worried how this is going to come out. I always feel this. I always talk. And I'm always like, I don't think I'm saying too much information. And then occasionally I'll listen back to the podcast. I'm like, oh, dear, why did I talk about my bowels?
Don't listen back to it. We'll talk about your bowels in a second. I'll ask you an emergency question. It was a very interesting story. I think it is, you know, like that's... it's interesting. I think that's an interesting about a teenage woman, you know, where you were, you know, I met you when you were 19 and, you know, you were a very sort of magnetic personality. And so, but you were obviously, you had a kind of low self-esteem. And so...
Of course you do. Yeah. Like, you're the only girl at most of these places you're still trying to find your tribe. And then most of the tribes were much older men.
Yes.
And they were lovely. Like so many, like that's the lovely thing about the comedy world or... That's sort of what I think is a really important part of it that we should keep, is it's the idea that you were all the kids who didn't have a place to sit at the table at lunch. Yeah. And then suddenly you become the cool kids who have the table. But unlike before where you reserve all the chairs, you always have the chairs sat open so anyone can sit up if they want to. Yeah. And I always liked that about Edinburgh, about the comedy world. And I really like it now. It's why I love travelling to different countries to gig, is that there's always that feeling of... You can walk into a room of comedians and you don't know each other. You might not all speak the same language, but we all know that at some point we weren't invited to sit at the table. Yeah. And then there's always like that, oh, come and join. Like that is, I really love that mentality. And it's something I think is really special.
I think there is, you know, I had a fireman on, Lee Hosey Pickett, on my book club. And he says, whenever you go into the world as a fireman, other firemen just accept you and you just immediately get on. But I think it is true of comedians, though I should point out, not all comedians have turned out to be great people.
This is the problem.
I just want to say that there have been a couple of cases historically.
Some of them have been really bad.
They may have been welcoming to begin with, but only they could masturbate in the corner at you.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Yeah, there's some. I think the problem is comedy should never be cool. I think that's the thing. Yeah. It shouldn't. If you're trying to do comedy to be cool, absolutely not.
No.
Like, it's not a cool thing to do.
I don't think it is, but that's what I like. And I don't like comedians who, like, try to be, like, cool. It doesn't fit for me because it's the kids who weren't cool who find a place to be.
Yeah.
And still remain uncool, I think.
I'm not cool at all. And I said this to my students, like, kids, I'm so uncool. And the kids were like, you are cool, miss. I was like, no, I'm not, mate. And that is why you never aspire to be cool. But when we did Drama Society, all the little kids, we did this, you know, all the kids who came to drama club, and we do, like, reenactments of The Shining. Why did I leave? But I would always say to the kids at the start of the lesson, and this kid's like age 11 to like 16, I was like, remember, this is the coolest place in the world right now. The coolest place is where you and your friends are. It's never out there. It's never the place that you're not. It's right now where you are. And the kids were like, yeah. And I'm like, right, okay, so who's going to play Jack Torrance? And they're like, me. We would do that. But I think it's a dangerous, not dangerous, but I think it's a really, and Edinburgh can create that, the mental, especially with the awards, that idea that someone else quantifies your validity as an artist. I find that really problematic.
Yeah, but I mean, any artist has to, you know, or performer has the audience have to do that to some extent. So, you know, so it's like, and there's every chance that someone could be amazing and no one ever discovers them, or they give up too soon. You know, like with a comedian, you know, you hear so much, someone going, I had a brilliant first gig and a terrible second gig, and you kind of think, if you'd had the terrible gig first, you probably would have never gone back and been a comedian. You know, yeah. you'd have had to have the good one first.
Yeah.
For most people, some people have terrible first ones and carry on. But then you think, so it all spins on that one audience, that one occasion.
Yeah.
And you could have had 9 fantastic gigs afterwards and you never know if you don't get the second one. So there's all this chance in it, but it does, you know, you need it's about validation. It's about connecting with people. But yeah, it doesn't one person's opinion.
Well, this is it. It's a two-way thing. Like the orchestra of the audience, they're a rare breed. You're never going to have that audience again. And it's a two-way thing. Like you both have the ability to affect the outcome. But then it's all economics, isn't it? Like, you know, each individual in this room will spread their word to one friend or two friends and it's up to them. And then the audience
fucking get on with that.
But it's always the audience's choice. They're in charge. It shouldn't be like one person.
Not my audience. My audience go, I like him, but I'm not going to tell a single person.
I'm going to keep it.
And I'm going to keep this to myself. I don't want him to be successful. I want him just to be successful enough to carry on going for 50 years. But then ultimately to have failed. We'll all just withdraw. Just as we realise he's about to die, we'll all withdraw our support. So he dies alone in the gutter. Thank you. And it's been a lovely life. I've enjoyed it.
What's happened? Is this because of the song when you sang El Canto?
It was. They didn't like the Encanto. And I'm going to have to pay a lot of money for putting that in the podcast. It's going to cost me
as much. Your book looks like a serial killer.
No, thank you. I've cut out.
You do that. That's so funny.
I've cut out ones from...
How long does that take you?
Well, not very long. I thought.
That's really sweet.
I'm going to put all the best emergency questions in a book. And I got like a really big book, yeah. Didn't I? Look how many pages it takes. There, it's blank from there. So I overestimated how many good emergency questions I had in my 8 books of emergency questions.
Are you going to give all your books to like a library or something when you part? Like
when I die, yeah. Just as I die.
No, sorry, I just want to remind
you. I'm just going to carry it in as I'm dying. I've given some of my stuff's already at the University, the Canterbury University of Kent.
That's cool.
But yeah, I hoarded everything. So I've got loads of like files full of our notes and stuff. But I don't think I'm not sure how much anyone wants to see the notes. The Lionel Nimrod's Inexplicable World.
I remember Al Murray said to me, it was like the coolest advice. Because I must have been 19 as well. Like, you know, when you go into those bars at Edinburgh and you don't really know anyone, and I would always be there. It's such a weird 19-year-old. I was so tired, but I wanted to go to these places because all the comedians were there. And I remember going to like the Loft Bar and ordering a coffee at 2 o'clock in the morning because I didn't want to drink, because I didn't want to be... And all these drunk comedians having double wines and big beers. Yeah. And then there's me having a coffee. And I think Al Murray spotted that. I was just a bit lost. And he's like, are you a comedian? I was like, yes, I want to be a comedian when I grow up. I'm trying very hard. And he was like, write everything down. Just write everything down and know your ending first.
Yeah.
And he said that, know your ending first. And I've always kept that. But it's funny because I've kept all my diaries. I've written a diary every day since I was 11.
Right.
And I sometimes go back and I time travel and I read them. And it's so funny. You look at the comedy ideas you wrote when you were 18 and you go, there's something there. But I have the skills now to make that funny. But before, all I could write was, buses are funny, question mark, or whatever the other. To clarify, that wasn't the thing. I was like, that's good. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you take it and you're like, oh. But you should. I go to the V&A sometimes, the Archive Museum, and you can look at all these old performers from like the war, and you can see all these old letters and these beautiful letters to like pantomime and vaudevillian artists going, thank you so much for cheering us up. Our village had been bombed and we've had a really stressful time moving. It was lovely to see your performance of Peter Pan. And you're just like, oh, I love the industry we're in.
Good. So this will be in the V&A.
I think it should.
I think it should be. And then people go, what? They asked to be if they'd ever tried to suck their own cock. What?
I don't think that's possible.
If you could... It is possible. Oh, believe me, it's possible. some people can do it. What I was going to ask you, if you could go into a chrysalis like a caterpillar does and come out of the chrysalis as anything you would want to be, you can choose what you're going to come out as.
Oh.
What would you come out of the... You're going in as you.
Yes.
And you could come out as anything.
As anything.
It can still be you. It can be you adapted. It can be you the same. It can be anything else.
Goodness.
Yeah. It's a hard question.
Oh, I'd really like... I'd love to be like a puffin.
Right.
I'd like to be a puffin. Oh, no, a shark. Yeah. shark. Oh, yeah. Great white shark for a bit, because that, actually their roots are changing at the moment. It's really interesting because, you know, they think some of them are going to come to Cornwall.
Do they?
Yeah. So it's really...
Well, it's a nice area. Yeah.
No, but their roots are fascinating.
Because of the changing temperatures in the
changing
water.
Changing temperatures, water changes, you know, more cold water in certain areas than others. Yeah. But yeah, so I mean, I think sharks are just a beautiful creature. I did a whole show about sharks as well, again, which, you know, five people came to.
So it's interesting, like, it's puffin first and then shark. So the immediate thought was puffin and then you went to shark, which I think might sum you up. Just like, you are more like a puffin than a shark, but then inside you the shark is...
Oh, I'm very much a shark.
Yeah.
I'm a shark.
Yeah.
I am actually. I'm quite strict.
Okay.
And I'm very...
Are sharks notoriously strict?
Oh, yes. Well, they have to be. Well, do you know, like...
Can't mess around when you're a shark.
Well, they have really difficult pregnancies, the female sharks as well. So they will have 8 pups on average with inside themselves.
Right.
And the pups will fight to the death till only one remains before that one is released. And the moment they release, the mother obviously just swims straight off because, you know, she's had a really tough time. Yeah. And
it's a shark as well. Who wouldn't run away from that?
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, exactly. So I'd be a shark, I think. Wow. What would you be?
I don't have to answer my own questions.
Convenient.
Weirdly, I haven't really thought about this one. I think I would like to be, if I could change anything, I don't want to change too much. I'd like myself, but I'd like to be 6'2".
You've got very nice hair.
I've got nice hair.
You've got nice hair, 6'2". You'd look like a Viking. Yeah. Well, you could be a Viking now.
It'd be nice to be tall for a bit. I mean, you are tall.
I'm tall.
But it's, you know, it is, as a man, it's one of those things. I'm not that bothered about it.
You're not short, though.
I'm pretty short.
5'10"?
No.
5'7"? Wait, how old are you?
I'm under 5'7".
Really?
Yeah, I'm little.
But you come across bigger.
I'm so big.
So there you go.
I've tried to grow outwards in every other direction. That's what we're trying to tell the kids not to use the word fat anymore. My wife really doesn't like it, but equally, you know, it's an impolite word. So my daughter, and they used to just go on about being fat. And now I just said, you're big in every direction except upwards.
I don't know about the thing about fat. There was one of my kids at one of my first schools used to introduce himself as Fat Sid.
Yeah.
He's like, my name's Fat Sid. And everyone was like, well, you can't call him Fat Sid. I was like, well, I'm not calling him Curvy. Hey, Curvy Sid. Like, DBS check's going to get taken away. He calls himself fat. If that's how he introduced himself, fair play to him.
Yeah, it's okay if someone chooses that. But I think it is, you know, it's an interesting thing to you know, that how much language can affect people early on. And so, like, in my childhood, there would be no fucking chance that anyone would go, oh, you can't call someone fat. They go why aren't you calling that fat kid fat? Start to go fatty blubber. You know, so we are horrible, but it's, you know, but also there's something innate in kids where they just want to say the word, you know. They just say what they say. It's not even a bad thing, because they're not judging it, they're just saying it.
Yeah.
But you're just also aware that if my 5-year-old kid runs into someone who's overweight and says, you big fatty, that they're gonna like at the best just upset the other person.
Yeah.
At worst, get cracked around the head. He'll get it one day. He deserves it. Let me ask you another emergency question. I'm very interested. I mean, I was going to ask you if you've ever seen a ghost, but you've already said...
I have seen a ghost.
Tell me about your ghosts then. And, you know, I knew you would have seen a ghost.
I have seen a ghost.
Have everyone who's going to see a ghost.
Well, I saw loads of ghosts when I was a kid at school.
Yeah.
But then that was why I had to go and see a psychiatrist for a bit, but we won't go into that. But the point is, this one child who was always following me down the corridors. Anyway, but the point is, So I used to live in Brixton. And it's not an exciting ghost story, but... So I lived on Brixton Road, and there was a lady who lived on the basement floor, like the floor at the bottom of the building. And she was an old lady, really, really lovely. And I would occasionally, when I saw her, help her with her bags. And she had one of those wheelie trolleys. Anyway, and I'd see her. And there was a cafe opposite called Di Lieto's, and I'd go to Di Lieto's all the time and have a coffee and chat to all the guys who worked there. And I went away to Adelaide Fringe and then Perth Festival for about 2 months, and I came back. And I go to Di Lieto's and I'm having a coffee and I say, oh, well, what's been going? Oh, I'll tell you the bit with the ghost first. So I came back anyway, settled in. And as I was coming into the flat, the old lady was coming into the house and she had her bags. And I was like, oh, hey, how are you doing? We just had a really brief chat. And I said, do you need me to help you carry your stuff in? She's like, oh, no, I'm fine. I was like, you sure? And she went, no, I'm all good. And I was like, cool. Went up to my room. Anyway, next day I went down to Di Lieto's and I asked them what they'd been up to. What's been going on? They were like, oh, well, the old lady died. about a month ago. And I was like, well, no, well, which old lady? They went, oh, you know, the lady on the ground floor. And I went, oh, no, well, she can't have died because I saw her. Are you sure? Because I saw her yesterday. And they're like, no, she did. Like, we've had her funeral. She, you know, the hearse was here and everything. I was like, oh, are you really sure? And I was really like, because yeah. obviously I'd seen her. And they went, no, if you go and knock, her grandchildren have moved in to sort the flat out. So I went across and I knocked on the door and her grandchildren opened up and she had died.
Yeah. Did one of the grandchildren look really like her? And that's why he was thinking, just went, okay, I'm going to go out wearing granny's shawl.
No, but it's not an exciting, it's not eerie, it's, but no, she was just, she was literally there. And then they told me that she, it wasn't like she was translucent. Or she just turned and went.
Yeah, there's no need to help me with my bag because
She literally told her I'd been to Australia. She was like, how was it? I was like, it's fine, thanks. Yeah, really good.
It's a good one because nearly every ghost story that someone tells, they're asleep and then they wake up and they see a ghost, or they're in bed and they see a ghost. But you were awake in that one.
Yeah, and it wasn't like there was nothing going on. Like, you could argue maybe I was jet lagged, but then, I mean, to visualise and fantasise a conversation with someone who has minimal input in your life would be kind of obscure.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Have you seen a ghost?
In my house, I live in an old house and there's lots of weird noises and stuff. And we did, me and my wife both would hear a baby crying. And then when my son was a baby, we'd go into the room and he'd be asleep and he wouldn't be crying. But we would both hear the crying.
Yeah.
But I mean, it might have been like an owl.
Yeah. And also sometimes you can, like, your brain can repeat sounds.
Yeah. Because also when you're really tired. So, like, it's always when I've seen a ghost of my son. That was very exciting, but he isn't dead.
Was it a reflection?
No, it was my son came into the, like, well, I woke up, my son came into the room, woke me up. Obviously, I was asleep, so it was a dream. Absolutely, and I can't visualize, you know, I can't, I've got aphantasia, so I can dream, but I can't visualize stuff. So, like, it would be very unusual. So, but it was like 100% a solid version of him. He came into the room, he woke me up, went, oh, the fuck. And then he went and sort of stood by the table with his back to me. And I go, what are you doing? And I reached out to him and my hand went through my son. And so I went in to check he was still alive. And he was still alive. And it was, you know, but it was absolutely him. But it was obviously some kind of, you know, coming out of a dream and imagining. But it was so real. So
that's really scary.
Yeah. But you know, it wasn't him and he isn't dead. So
do you ever get that? I get friends texting me. And when I say a lot, I do mean like at least once or twice a month. A random friend who I haven't seen in a while texting goes, hey, are you doing okay? Because I had a dream about you and I just want to check you're all right. And I'm like, what am I doing in people's consciousness where I'm clearly like, help me. And people wake up and feel the need to text. Like, have you ever had that? Or like,
no, I think
texted
just,
someone?
I think people are just worried about you, Elf. That's what they're thinking. I mean, with good reason.
I think I'm fine.
Okay, well, you think you're fine, but obviously everyone else is very, very worried about you. They're going, I hope Elf's all right.
What if I find out I look out for this podcast and then I text you and I'm like, it hasn't been released yet. And then you're like, Elf, we never recorded. <There we go. laughs>
What I get all the time is people fucking tweeting me saying, I've got it again this weekend. So I just, oh, just my son was just looking at your shoes on the tube. And they go, no, he wasn't. Because I'm like, all the time, there's a lot of people who look exactly like me. I mean, many of them are in the room, to be fair. But like a couple of them actually just also pretend to be. So when they're asked, they said, there was a guy who was at a festival and this guy, and he got a photo taken with this girl. This girl came up to him and she said, no, it was great to meet you. And she sent me the photo and I went, he doesn't really look like me. But the guy was absolutely perfectly happy to go, yeah, I'm Richard Herring.
Oh my God.
So someone out there is getting some on the back of, and it's not me. And I'm annoyed about that. Very annoying. Look, we're winding up. Is there anything you're doing after Edinburgh you want to mention? Is anything coming up?
What am I doing? Oh God, I'm doing loads of stuff. Yeah. That didn't mean to sound boastful. It was like, oh, I'm very lucky. So what am I doing? Oh, if you've subscribed to my mailing list, I've been told I've got to start doing this on my website, Elf Lyons, that's my name.
Yeah.
I recorded a special here actually in April of me just improvising stand-up for an hour. Right. It wasn't meant to be improvised, but I got distracted. And it actually, you know, overall, very consistently good. But releasing that on my website. And so that was really fun. And then I'm just making and working in horror stuff. Raven, which was my
a show I did last Edinburgh, which I toured, was the, so it's a one woman horror show where I reenact all of Stephen King's books, but then turn into a bouffon or monster at the end. I'll probably be redoing that again. Great. And then touring Duffy and I show.
That's the one you bite the guy's dicks off at the end of.
Yeah, so yeah. I smash up loads of vegetables to Rage Against the Machine. Great. Fuck you, I won't do what you tell me.
Okay.
And it's really fun, really punk. Good. And I smash up a whole giant watermelon with my head. Because it's quite powerful.
Yeah.
And it reenacts Carrie. You know,
are you ever worried the watermelon might win that one?
No, I ended up in hospital.
Yeah.
But not, it's a second day of Edinburgh. Okay. I nearly died. Not because of the water. Well, there was water on the stage and it was, and I flipped backwards and landed on my head and I lost my eyesight and my nose started bleeding. I finished the show. I did finish the show. And you know what's so funny is I got reviewed that night and the reviewer, and I love reviews. So funny, but this review was like, at some point she seems disorientated. But I had to go to hospital because my ears were like, I was really, really sick.
Wow.
And John Robertson who does the Dark Room,
yes,
one of the best human beings in the whole wide world, took me to A&E with McPerrin's management, and they were all with me, and I had to have a CT scan, and they were like, you have such a bad concussion, we would recommend you do not perform for the rest of the Fringe. And I was like, I can't do that because it's quite expensive. I need to do the show. So I can't remember the first week of the festival. And I had to wear a funny little helmet. There's a really funny picture of me. I did the show, and you know what? Overall,
good. For someone with brain damage, it was pretty
yeah,
good.
Yeah, I got, do you know what? I promise, got standing ovations every single night, and I'm really annoyed because I can't remember a single fucking one of them. But I think that's pretty cool. But then after that, we had to come up with a special reflex for the mallet. So I hold a hammer and I flick it down, and a mallet, and I would normally throw up until the air and catch it. And obviously, that's quite hard when you've got double vision. So I had to wear these like little cords around my wrist, so I could always, it was always attached to my hand.
Yes. Well, you're very committed to your work, Elf.
I'm an artist.
Which is what I love about you.
Mummy's an artist.
Remind us where Heist is on, where we can see Heist in Edinburgh.
Heist is at the Monkey Barrel at 8:40 p.m. And it has an interpreter as well who voices Duffy. So if you've got any deaf, hard of hearing friends, do obviously spread the word. And also if you are blind or visually impaired, I audio describe the show. So you are able to understand it regardless. I'm not sure if the venue's wheelchair accessible. I think it might be, but that's something to be checked out.
Okay, yeah. I mean, many of them are not. So,
the Monkey Barrel's pretty amazing in most regards.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the most affordable. It's the best one. It's just categorically the best.
For the audience and the acts as well?
I just think for everyone, it's just the most healthy model.
Yes.
But they're all trying that. Well, some venues are trying better than others.
They
but
are.
Yeah, I'm excited. I don't care. I'm having a lovely time.
Good. Well, that is the main thing. Go and have a lovely time. And I would say that I envy you for going, but I don't. I'm glad I'm not going this year. So maybe I'll go back in the future. And ladies and gentlemen, please give it up the amazing Elf Lyons. Thank you very much. You have been listening to Rahulastapo with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Elf Lyons. The music is by Scant Regard. I'm in Jeff Zoo, Chris Evans, not that one. George, the incompetent Sandman. Ben Evans, not that one. And everyone at the Bill Murray Pub, thank you for your kind regards and having us at your venue. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.